This is A Wild Conversation.
My name's Callum Hughes. I'm a keeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo. I'm joined by Ashley.
Ashley Wysick, another keeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And today we have a special guest, Jonah, a dinosaur researcher.
Yes, I'm the resident dinosaur researcher here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo, and I'm also one of the education coordinators. So you'll see me around doing things like tours and, sometimes up at the dinosaur park as well.
Before we get into it, I got to ask you, what got you into dinosaurs in the first place?
I think the same thing that almost every child that grew up in the 90s and early 2000s, Jurassic Park for the most part.
Definitely.
seeing Jurassic Park, seeing the dinosaurs come to life, even if I had some small amount that I really loved about fossils or the pictures I see of dinosaurs, that's what would have drawn me in for sure.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that. I love dinosaurs, love watching, even today, the YouTube videos.
Yep.
Like, have you watched Eons on YouTube?
Yes, I watch Eons here and there. And I've also got a few other people that I follow on YouTube for sure that they've got lots of paleontology and stuff that they talk about. And it's always fun to get those updates along the way.
Awesome. Can you relate to that, Ashley? Have you had a fascination with dinosaurs at a young age too?
I'm going to be the weird one in this group. And no, I have never really been super into dinosaurs. They're okay. They're cool. But I've always, if I can't pet it, I never really understood how to relate to it when I was younger. So I was into horses, I was into cats, and I was into dogs. I was very boring.
Hey, no, totally fair, you know? Out with the old, in with the new, I guess.
So I'm probably going to learn the most out of this podcast today. I'm just going to say, this is going to be fun. I'm excited.
Nice.
I mean, fair enough. I just think it's interesting that you say that you're the most boring when you were probably the person running around looking at all of the animals that were sitting around in like outside. Meanwhile, you've got the dinosaur people who are either watching shows and just sitting and watching them, reading books to look at them, or possibly pretending to be dinosaurs, I guess would be the third option.
I'm going to take that as a compliment. Thank you. I'm very interesting.
It was a compliment. You are interesting, yes.
So at the zoo, a lot of people sometimes ask us, why did we introduce a dinosaur park when we have living animals already?
Well, one of the things that I personally like to emphasize is that these animals were once upon a time alive, and there are things that we can learn from these animals. We can learn about the ecology, the adaptations, and all the sorts of information from looking into the past at these animals. And the other side is, when we're talking about animals and we're talking about having all of these living animals, making comparisons to things that are in the past, these prehistoric animals, the dinosaurs really do bring another level to understanding how things are connected. Giraffes aren't a spontaneous thing that consumes like leaves at the tops of trees. There were things that would have done that before. And right. It's a trend that happens throughout time and evolution. Something is always going to be like, hey, if there's food way up there and nothing else is eating it, eventually something is going to grow to start eating it because they're going to want food.
It's interesting to think about. Definitely, like, imagine if the carnivores that we have today would reach the size of some of those carnivorous dinosaurs, right?
Whoa. That is a terrifying thought. Just that is my input, and that is that I am scared of that already.
I think our biggest carnivore that's alive today that's on land is the polar bear, right?
Yes. As far as I know, the polar bear would be the biggest.
Yeah, the polar bear is our largest land carnivore, from what I understand.
You would definitely know. You are the carnivore keeper. So
I am the carnivore expert.
Yeah, as far as I know, they're the biggest, but also just considering the idea that all of the fauna, all of the living things would just be scaled up that extra notch is just terrifying as a small human. Most of the time we survive on the fact that we are creative, and I don't know how much creativity would it work if we were alongside something that big. I think we'd be just hiding most of the time.
I mean, if you think about it, that's kind of how mammals were doing in the dinosaur era, right? They're kind of like, Also, the thought that came and popped into my head was giant rodents. And I'm also not into that idea.
See, now I'm just thinking of ROUSs from oh gosh, what's this? No, it's a show. It's a movie. It's a book. Princess Bride. There we go. Princess Bride. I love Princess. Yeah. No, now I'm thinking of Princess Bride with R.A.U.S.'s and the fact that he still barely fought off one of them or a couple of them. So, yeah, I'd rather not have to deal with rodents of that size.
Totally fair.
I agree. Yep.
Totally fair. So, regarding some of the dinosaurs that we have at the park, have you uncovered any interesting topics, any updates into the information on these animals?
Okay, so one of the things that I've researched and found, and it is something that has stuck with me for a while, it's one of my go-to facts, and I brought this up with Ashley actually a little while ago, is sauropods. So sauropods are the long-necked dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. And some of those sauropods, such as Brachiosaurus and a few others, not all of them, but a few others, they have like an enlarged, or from studying their skulls and their skeletons, they have an enlarged like nerve bundle at the front of their face, and that enlarged nerve bundle is, in today's animals, usually associated with an animal that has a trunk. So things like an elephant, or things like basically tapirs, anything that's got like a large length to their snout or something that they can move around.
Really?
Now, we don't have any good evidence that these things actually had it other than this analysis. We don't have any skin samples, or we don't have any trace fossils that show that the trunk was there. But it's a very interesting idea to play with the idea that something that's already the one of the largest animals who ever existed on the planet could have also had a trunk.
Yeah,
just that sticking out the top of its head.
That would completely change our like our image of that animal completely. I've always seen them like with a flat, like the, you know, perfect, almost like it's been skin wrapped on a skull, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And one of the things that I also find interesting is because for me, the first picture that I thought of when I thought of something having this trunk was actually the absurd picture of it having like just like a 3-foot trunk, just like something really small, just like on the top to grab like that extra leaf to get it to its mouth or something. And then I was reminded that they could have had a trunk that reached all the way down to the ground to grab things off of the ground and make it less of a strain to bend over.
That would be so crazy to think of. Like, could you imagine how long that trunk would have to be able to reach all the way? But yeah, kind of like modern day, like the modern elephant. Same idea.
Yeah, just for the creature that's like over 20 meters tall.
Wow.
It's just a horrendously long trunk. But again, we don't have any trace fossils, which would be things like skin impressions or anything like that would actually show that this trunk would actually be on the animal. But we have this slight evidence from analyzing their skull that suggests that there was a large bundle of nerves there. And it's also crazy just to consider, on a side note with sauropods, that some of these dinosaurs are known from like 7 bones. It's like a skull and then like a neck vertebra and then like a leg bone. And you're like, all right. And this is an entirely different dinosaur than the last one that we found that was also a skull and a vertebra and a neck bone, or and a leg bone. And we can just tell, you know, they're different. There we go. And it's just kind of crazy to consider that we have to look at that tiny snapshot and be like, this is what we've got.
What kind of makes you think that the entirety that we know about dinosaurs is probably a snapshot? There's probably all sorts of dinosaurs we have no idea even ever existed because none of them were fossilized.
Well, and that is exactly it. That's when we're dealing with fossils, it's so hard to actually fathom how much we're missing. In today's day and age, and I know it gets into a conservation topic as well, is like people are discussing how much we see disappear, all of the animals that we see disappear every day. And part of that could very well be just that we are seeing it. We're actually analyzing it constantly and we're seeing it. And that maybe this was happening in the past. Well, I would argue to differ, and I would say that we are definitely causing an impact to these animals disappearing. But in the past, all we can see are like, all right, well, from this 100 million years, here are 40 different animals. There you are. That's what we've got so far. We're still looking, but you can only find fossils in very specific situations. You need the right sediment that they would have been locked up in, and they need to have basically been hit by a natural disaster. They had to be hit by like a landslide or covered over by a flood or maybe covered in ash. And all these things are so rare. Like, even if you think of just in 1 year, now the world was different, but if you just think of 1 year, what we currently have as like a natural disaster, something like landslides and volcanoes that might actually trap something, it's not very many. And I mean, we're looking at millions of years, but like, you don't have that many opportunities. There's not that many opportunities to actually get great fossils in today's day and age. And you just got to think about how long of a time span we're looking at. We're looking at from like a little over 200 million years ago to 66 million years ago. It is a long, long time span that we're looking at just to see into the world of dinosaurs.
That blows my mind. Like, I don't know why, but sometimes I learn facts. Well, I know why. Every time I learn a fact about dinosaurs and the time period they're at, I learn something that blows my mind. Like, we are closer time-wise to T-Rex than T-Rex is to Stegosaurus.
Yes, this is very true. And that's actually one of the ones I love the most, is because people always, it's always Triceratops and Stegosaurus. And those two fight T-Rex whenever people have things fighting. And you're like, well, not even a little bit. When it comes to T-Rex and Stegosaurus, not even a little bit. They wouldn't have even known each other existed.
Wow.
Half the time.
I even heard like a thing to think about that might, you know, also blow your mind is dinosaurs would have walked over the fossilized remains of dinosaurs millions of years before them.
It's very true.
They would have been exposed like they are today and destroyed well before we even existed or our earliest ancestors existed. That's crazy to me.
They're blocking the way of science. How dare they?
The dinosaurs weren't very good at keeping their museum collections in order. So,
well, we can just shame them for that one then. That's on them for not furthering our advancement.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Although I would have loved to see what a dinosaur would have made into a museum. Like, I'd imagine it had to be super lofty to let everybody in. Like all these little things you got to think about when you're like, I'm serving such a broad spectrum of customers. Some things that are tens of meters long, and some things that are, well, if we're talking about the mammals, like very, very small, couple of feet. You're like, all right, make sure everybody can see.
So these mammals, were they like us today, or were they or the animals that we see today? What were they like?
I'm not 100% on all of them. I know some of them looked somewhat rodent-like. They would look furry, and because of that, we'd be like, yeah, that's a mammal. Yeah, I can tell it's a mammal. But for the layperson, I don't think many people would look at them and be like, yes, that's clearly related to something that I know of today, of today's day and age. Most people would probably think they looked like weird rodents of some sort for most of them. They weren't very big. They were very much trying to hide for most of the time. There were carnivores and omnivores in the mix, and they mostly just would have hunted for baby dinosaurs. They weren't very big. Those dinosaur babies were not large, so they might have hunted for some of them, but generally they would have just been sticking to the shadows and trying to make sure that they weren't the next pterosaur's meal or some other dinosaur.
Or, you know, getting stepped on. I feel like that's also a very high risk back then.
I mean, I guess you could say that. I guess you could say that you'd have to be worried about getting stepped on. And when I said pterosaurs and other dinosaurs, pterosaurs technically weren't dinosaurs, but that's besides the point. That can be a whole other conversation.
Definitely, yeah. Like, I mean, like, there would have been other animals like interacting with the dinosaurs too that were big players, right? Like the pterosaurs and...
So there were the pterosaurs. In the water, you had the aquatic lizards. So you would have had things like Mosasaur and Ichthyosaurus that would have been cruising around in the waters. There were also sharks and turtles around in those times as well. There were crocodilians and their ancestors that would have been around during that time. Mammals, amphibians were around. At that point, actually, in the Jurassic period, pretty much everything had already shown up. We had mammals, we even had birds
that really?
Were flying around. Yeah, so Archaeopteryx is touted as the like first known ancestor to birds, and it's dated back to about 150 million years ago. But they actually have pretty well, almost fully advanced birds about 125 million years back that would have had no teeth in their beaks. They would have been flighted. They would have had full flighted feathers. And they would have resembled things that we could actually recognize. Like, the untrained eye could look at it and be like, that was a bird. So it's kind of crazy to think that back even in the Jurassic period, pretty much all of the classes of life that we know today were already pretty much on their way and cruising around.
So I remember Archaeopteryx. I remember all like the stories about it. So it's officially kind of, according to new research, lost its place as the first. It was actually pretty much, it wasn't the first that done it. They did the research and it lost its place, right?
This is, yes, I have seen that, and it's how it goes. You found one fossil, and it's the most famous at the moment, but you found the fossil. It has clear links between dinosaurs and birds, and then you find something else that's slightly different, that's got a few more missing link characteristics just between those, between Archaeopteryx and then maybe with dinosaurs or maybe with birds. And that's how it goes with fossils. You never know until you find the next one.
Right.
And until then, you got to make your statement, because otherwise it's just nobody knows what these things are. And you just sit there and you're like, yeah, this is Archaeopteryx. And you're like, what is it? And you're like, it's a thing. Because I don't know until I find the rest of them.
Totally get that. It's interesting you brought up feathers, because I have to ask you, there's a lot of talk about dinosaurs having feathers, some that didn't. What's the deal with that?
I would 100% be down for Jurassic Park with feathered dinosaurs, just by the way. I think it would be adorable.
So the feathers were an adaptation that mostly came through with the theropods. So the theropods are the two-legged meat-eating dinosaurs that are generally the ones that we think of. So with the raptors and with like Tyrannosaurus and things like that, they're the line that would have brought feathers in. Now, when it comes to raptors, most of them would have had pretty much fully feathered. They just wouldn't have been for flight. They just the feathers would have been on the scales. And they just wouldn't have been for flight. And then from there, those feathers, that line would have dived into the bird line, into getting into the aves category. But not all dinosaurs would have had feathers, or we at least can't state all of those dinosaurs would have had feathers until we've found skin impressions. So with many of the things like Velociraptor, we can tell that there were feathers that were on this bird or on this raptor, because when they found some of the fossils, there were actually preserved feathers in that fossil. And so you can see the impressions of those feathers in that fossil. Even with things like Tyrannosaurus, they get a little bit of a question mark sometimes, because there's, I believe, patches on the Tyrannosaurus that have been shown. This clearly has tiny little feathers, like up, I think it's like around the shoulder area. And you're like, interesting. And then they find a clear skin impression around the stomach. And they're like, there are no feathers here. So now they're like, well, that means it's not fully feathered. So now what do we do? So some people are like making artist renditions of like patchy feathers up around the shoulders. Maybe it's only the adults. Maybe the juveniles have it. And it leads to a lot of questions until, again, you find that perfect fossil that shows everything. You really don't have a way to know for sure.
I like the idea of Tyrannosaurus being kind of like a peacock, having a whole bunch of fan of feathers to show off for females and doing a bit of a dance.
Okay, so you want just a bunch of tail feathers that stick up straight up into the air on this giant, like, scavenging apex predator.
No, not the tail. On the shoulders, you know? Almost like a big feather boa show off for the ladies.
Okay, so you want the Jurassic Park version of the Diplodocus, where it's got that big frill, but instead of it being skin, you want feathers. You just want to pop out in feathers.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
That sounds horrifying, but okay. I mean, that's, to be fair, nature works in weird ways.
Despite how outrageous what Ashley brought up.
I think it's a fair point, okay?
I apologize to all devoted T-Rex fans. I also heard something really controversial from you just a second ago. You said scavenging dinosaur.
Yes.
I've heard that. T-Rex, scavenger, or carnivore? What team are you on?
I'm on team... Well, so it can be a carnivore, but it's also a scavenger, because some of the research that's been coming through is that it is so big, and compared to everything else that they've found in that time frame, it is actually the apex predator of its niche. Like, it is the big predator of the big predators. And it is so much bigger that it probably didn't really do a lot of active hunting unless it really felt it needed to. At this point, they believe that it, or there are scientists that believe that it may have just looked for the young, the old, the ones that have already died, and it's like, okay, those ones I'm going to go eat. And if they come across another dinosaur that's already scavenging or already eating their kill, they might just walk over and be like, I'm bigger than you, leave, or I might kill you. And then now I get your food. And they may have roamed around in that way, which I believe is relatively similar to how many lions and stuff work as well. They just scare off the food, because they were very big. They were...
Yeah, I find that really frustrating, like, to be able to tell the difference between something being a carnivore and a scavenger. Because, like you were saying, with the rarity of fossils, you'd have to find a fossil. And I think they did find one where the animals attacked a living animal, it somehow survived, and the bone healed, but it still left an impression of the bite that we could use to ID that the Rex attacked it. I heard that there was a hadrosaur tailbone that had been bitten and it managed to escape, and it fit, the tooth fit in place of a Rex, but that could also be just that that's what they want and it just happened to fit. So it's so tricky to find that.
It is true. It is very true. There's bite marks for things on hadrosaurs. They've also had bite marks on the frills of triceratops, and it creates a lot of controversy. But sometimes you do find like the perfect fossil that helps actually show something. There was on a bit of a side note, there was actually one that was found. It's an embryo. There was actually an embryo found in a fossilized egg. Now this embryo was found actually about 20 years ago, or the egg was found about 20 years ago, and they only just were able to publicize that they'd found like this embryo in the egg back in, I think it was like December 21st of 2021. So they just found and released it, but the thing was, it had been in storage for like over 10 years. And then they were remodeling a museum and they're like, oh, we should really dig into these fossils here that we've just been having on storage for years. And we should actually go look into it. And then some researchers did it. One of them was, and the one that's been quoted the most is Dr. Fionn Wasim Ma of the University of Birmingham. And she did a bit of an interview about this fossil. And it's crazy because it's actually the complete embryo of what they think is an oviraptorosaur, or an oviraptor like animal. Now an oviraptor, for those who don't know, it's a theropod, so it's a two-legged bipedal dinosaur, which would have run into that feathered raptor line down the road. The name actually means egg thief lizard, because when they first found the first oviraptor, they thought that it had been stealing eggs out of a nest. And then after they found all of these other relatives of oviraptor, and they actually realized that the behavior that the oviraptor was doing was actually protecting its nest. So it went from egg thief lizard to more or less very good parent. but we aren't going to rename it, because obviously it's going to be super confusing for everybody if we just change this entire line of dinosaurs to be like, oh yeah, these are the parent dinosaurs, the good parents. But that being said, that in itself is a behavior that you can see through fossils. And the other crazy thing is actually with this oviraptor baby, they named it Yingling. It was actually doing a very particular behavior, or they think it's doing a very particular behavior that current eggs, bird eggs, do. And I'm wondering if Ashley is actually going to know what this is, because as far as I know, she's got the most knowledge on birds.
The tucking behavior.
Correct.
I win.
Now, Ashley, would you be willing to explain what the tucking behavior is?
Basically, when a bird is about to hatch out of its egg, it's getting ready to hatch, they will reposition themselves into a better position. For people who don't understand what we're talking about.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And it's doing this behavior. Now, obviously, it's possible it's a coincidence. But that being said, if it's doing this behavior, that means, and this fossil is about like 72 to 66 million years old, which means that the behavior has been around since possibly that far back, or presumably that far back. And that means that birds right now, having developed this tucking behavior, it possibly could have been a behavior that's been passed down ever since 66 million years ago from their dinosaur ancestors. It's something that actually has been just carried forward, and it's entirely possible, like thinking rationally, that this is a behavior that could have happened ever since hard eggs were being laid. Once hard solid eggs were being laid, that this might have been a behavior that's been developed ever since then.
I mean, if you find a way that works, why change it, right?
That's exactly true. That's the way that kind of goes. If that's something, and I mean, it's not like anything's going to change inside of an egg to make it different that you want to hatch in a different way. So that was super cool. That being said, there's only, I believe I saw real quick that there was only like 6 embryos that have ever been found in fossils. So to actually have one, a complete embryo, because this is one of the only, if not the only, complete embryo that's been found in a fossil.
Right.
It's doing, it's complete, and also it is doing a behavior. And those two things are like super rare, because you have to consider that means that it was within the last couple of weeks or a couple of days, maybe a couple of hours before it hatched when it ended up being fossilized. And that's a massive coincidence with how rare it is to find fossils in the first place. It's finding needles in a haystack. And at this point, you're finding a needle in like New York to try and find this fossil. Like that is actually an amazing find. But it also begs the question of how many other fossils are sitting out there that we've never been able to dig up or look into that are just sitting in storage somewhere and have already been found. They've already been found, and they have these cool traits to them that we could learn from.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So, I mean, any advice to us if you think you're going to unfortunately pass away, almost certainly, and you're surrounded by sedimentary material, we should try and do the behaviors so we can help paleontologists in the future know what we were doing and how we live our lives, right? Unless we're unlucky like Oviraptor and they get the complete wrong idea.
Way to turn this super cryptic.
Huh?
Well, I mean, the other side of this, though, is that, I mean, you can also take advantage of the fact that that somebody from the future is going to look back and see what it was that you were doing, and you can just do something that would throw them off completely just for the fun of it to make everybody's life harder.
They'll find your fossilized remains with young, and they'll be like, ah, this is a baby stealer, instead of assuming, oh, maybe it's a mom.
That's very true. There is actually one more thing that I wanted to ask, and that is, just because it's one thing that gets a lot of people really forget about this. Dinosaur eggs weren't that big. So this egg was only, the embryo was 27 centimeters long. The egg was about 17 centimeters long. Hmm. Ostrich eggs are about 15 centimeters. Do you actually know what the largest egg known is? The ostrich is the current largest living.
No, I'm not very good with fossilized stuff.
The elephant bird of Madagascar, and its egg was 35 centimeters long and 27 meters wide.
Cool. Poor bird.
Yeah, that is insane.
Yeah, but it won't get much bigger than that because of the amount of nutrients, the calcium that's needed to make that shell that big. It's just, it would be absurd in order to actually do that. But that's all I've got to, that's all I'm going to push on this topic.
So even though that, you're saying that even though dinosaurs and birds have very strong similarities in the nest, there has been change over time. So the eggs have changed, right? The way that they've been laid, they've gotten bigger.
To a degree. So yeah, some of them have gotten bigger, but most of them, the thing is that the size in general, there is just a physics and biology maximum. It just can't get any It can't get much bigger than that elephant bird egg. And the thing was is that the elephant bird egg didn't last too long, because in the 1300s, it was eaten by humans for the most part, because it's a great source of protein.
So I think that's a great example why we have the dinosaur park. It connects the past with the present from the fossil remains.
Exactly. And there's some lessons that can be learned even looking into the past.
Well, thank you very much for coming out, Jonah. I really enjoyed talking to you.
It was really fun. I'm going to be thinking about Tyrannosaurus Rex wearing feather boas and all sorts of fun stuff tonight. It's great.
It has been fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
If anyone has any questions for us or for Jonah, especially regarding dinosaurs, please don't hesitate to contact us at podcast@gvzoo.com. This is Callum.
And Ashley Wysick.
And this has been
A Wild Conversation.